The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests, and are not those of Pesmo Radio, its employees or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements of any radio show programs or products mentioned on air, on our website, social media accounts and marketing materials. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to Pesmo Radio, its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing Pesmo Radio.
Are you a songwriter? Are you looking to turn your songwriting passion into a full-time gig? Whether you are just at the start of your songwriting journey or a seasoned industry professional, this show is made for you. Welcome to The Songwriter Show, bringing together songwriting news, interviews, and community. Now, welcome your host, Sorantos.
Thank you for tuning in and welcome back to The Songwriter Show. I'm your host, Sorantos. I'm a solo music artist who's been writing lyrics for as long as I can remember. Words are very important to me, and that's why I'm so thrilled to host this show. I believe that every song is a story. The Songwriter Show is broadcast live on number one ranked Pesmo Radio and has listeners in all 26 countries in the world and every state in America. The station is licensed with SCAP, BMI, CSAC, and SoundExchange, and has partnerships throughout the music industry, including iHeartRadio and exposure to its 300 million listeners. Tonight's first guest I'm really excited about, and it's actually, he's the only guest tonight. He's got the whole show. As you guys know, I'm an author, and I occasionally have authors on the shows. His name is Wayne McFarland. He's wandered away from a small Midwestern town a few years ago with no planning at all. His history is one of stumbling into one bog after another, from the Dakotas to California, from Pamplona to Paris. His main claim to fame is mostly and surprisingly not being dead, plus getting involved with a lot of strange stuff, usually unwillingly or by accident.
And now, welcome this week's special guest.
So we're going to talk about his book. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff, and I think you guys would love this fun interview. So welcome to the show, Wayne. How are you doing tonight?
Sorantos, I am doing wonderful. Thank you. This is great. Appreciate the shot. Wonderful to be on your show.
Thank you. You're a very interesting guy. I think that's probably the understatement of the year on this show. I'm reading your bio, and it just kind of, I can't read it without laughing. It's humorous. It's sarcastic. It's witty. And I love all that stuff. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. Really, thank you very much. Very kind of you.
You're welcome. So what is your earliest memory of starting anything in this creative realm? When did you start this stuff?
Well, I think when you've got the bug, you know, probably from the time you're a kid, I would have to say, and I'll bet it's the same thing with you, that you just kind of driven to do stuff or find out about stuff and create stuff. So I'd have to say from the time I was a kid, but I was raised mostly on a small farm in the Midwest. So, you know, this COVID isolation is very familiar to me, you know, and ran away from there just to get involved with various things. In the end, you know, I've been asked why I wrote this, what I loosely call a memoir. And the reason is, you know, when we had a little business, software business we sold, and after we did so, I love to read, and I've always loved memoirs and biographies. So I started reading a lot of memoirs, and Sorantos, I got to tell you what, my friend, most of them really suck. I mean, they're all this sort of, there I stood with a crooked smile but straight teeth and gazed at the mountains and said, there lies my destiny. As you know, you start with something like that and then roll through momentous events. My opinion is that, in fact, life is a series of just things that happen to you. You know, you start out to drain a swamp, and then you notice the alligators. And, you know, it's kind of like the stuff you're doing. You've done all kinds of stuff, and I would be willing to bet that no small part of it started out just because you loved doing something and thought you'd give it a shot, and suddenly there you are with a radio show that goes all over the world. So, yeah. So I decided to put together a memoir just made up of stories like the day we blew town with a monkey and things like that, because that's really it. You know, people try and look back on life and pretend it's some big planned somber event. I think it's just made up stuff, Sorrentos, honestly. There was a humorist who died years ago. Not sure if that's relevant. But he said, you know, when you write down all the stuff you didn't do and leave out all the stuff you did do, that's a memoir. And that's pretty much what I found. So I thought, well.
And I think that most people, I don't even think most people write their own memoirs or their own books.
You know, there's something to that now. There's a lot to that, actually, with the self-publishing thing out there and how easy it is to put together some kind of manuscript. Yeah, I mean, there's everything from computer programs that'll do them for you and to, you know, ghostwriters out there. If you got an extra $200 or $300, you know, they'll come up with a memoir that you need a hero suit and a cape to live up to. Yeah, you're right. I think I have no idea how many of these books are written directly by the author, but not as many as we think.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about this book. Is it released yet, or is it going to be released?
It's out there, and I had a publisher for a time until suddenly one day I realized they weren't doing anything to push my book, so I fired them, and we start selling a bunch of copies.
Sort of like as soon as you fire them, right, then you start selling.
Yeah, it's sort of like signing up with a music producer, and one day you realize they're not doing anything to push your music. And it's out there. Here comes my first gratuitous, shameless plug, Tales from the Day, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and decent bookstores, I like to think, everywhere, but Amazon for sure.
And it's, I assume, printed as well as ebook.
Yep. And there's an audio version as well. And Sorrentos, I got to tell you, I sound pretty good. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. I'll tell you, some of the people to read your book, man, that gets super expensive. So you doing it by yourself in terms of the dictation and stuff probably saved you a ton of money.
Yep. And it, you know, I had forgotten. I did a little bit of that years ago, but I had forgotten. It's like your show. People just don't realize there's a lot of work, editing work and all that, even though for those of us with the pearly tones, there's a lot of work. And you do this, what, every week?
Yeah, and you know, not just that, not just setting guests up, screening them, because, you know, people want to be on the show. And again, you want people, to me, it doesn't matter if people are famous. I like if they have a cool story and if they're good people. I try to help. Even if someone has like 10 followers, I don't care about that. Yeah. But sometimes people are not very forthcoming or honest. And then after the show, you got to edit it before it gets put on Apple and Spotify and Google. And there's literally, this show is syndicated to, I think, over 150 places. So it is a lot of work. Post it. And then sometimes people are like, oh, hey, listen, you know, instead of that name, can you use this name? And then you got to resubmit it. And it does take work, for sure.
Yeah, it really does. And also, you know, it's one thing when you're an author, you're putting yourself out there, but you're not putting yourself out there every week. I mean, you put something out there and you hope people don't do the Mel Brooks thing, like the caveman, you know, peeing on the cave wall of the cave paintings. You know, you hope people like it, but you don't know. You don't know.
Yeah, you're right. And you're vulnerable.
Yeah.
You're vulnerable. You put something out there, whether it's a book, whether it's a song, it's an expression of yourself. And I'm sure you do this too, where you get, you know, you get reviews to see kind of, hey, was this one of my better works or was this? Yeah. And literally some people will love it. And the next review is like, they hate it for the same reasons.
Yeah.
And it's just hard to figure out. All you could do is try to get better because none of us think we've arrived. And even if you've arrived, you want to keep evolving. But it is very vulnerable, for sure.
Well, it is. Plus the fact you get a certain amount of... I got trolled the other day. And, you know, I like to think I'm kind of calloused about stuff. But it still hurts. Especially if somebody's doing it just to gratuitously take a shot at you. But it's just something. If you're gonna do it, you got to stick your neck out. There's just no way to get around that.
Yeah, one of my favorite people that someone sent me this article once, James Blunt is a musician. He's had one hit song, you know, You're Beautiful. He gives trolls, he gives them shit back. It's hilarious the way he does it. He literally has on his Twitter, it's like, you know, yeah, I only have one hit song, you know, or it only takes one or something like that. And he actually opened, I saw him last year, he opened for Ed Sheeran, and he was hilarious. Wow. And I swore, I said, you know, if I ever make it, I'm a very sarcastic, playful, smartass. You got to be careful. No one tries to offend people, but I would love to kind of just some gentle ribbing and just to be sarcastic if I ever make it, because that's my true personality.
Well, I think it's the best way to go. Honestly, I do. If you've got the, you have the, it takes a certain skill, certain innate skill, and clearly you could do it. And it always amazes me that there are people who troll you and put out or shout from the audience or whatever they do. But then if you're skilled at putting them down, they get all offended. And I'm thinking, well, then don't do it. You don't want to open yourself up for somebody to, you know, poke a stick at you. Then don't start.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. It's tough. It's not like I ever want to insult people. I've been insulted and you just take it. You're just like, it's part of the game. But at the end of the day, a lot of the people that are trolling you have never been creative. They've never put anything out. I've had this 7-year journey. I started 7 years ago and I'm always trying to get better. And I see the steps and the growth in myself, and all you can do is try to grow from it, because I see other people get really spiteful and hateful, and they essentially yell back and flip people off, and that doesn't accomplish anything. It feeds the trolls, and, yep. You know, try to be honest about it. Try to see. Maybe they have a point. Maybe what they're saying is true.
Not if, Sorrento's, not if they're criticizing you and I. They got to be full of crap, you know? I mean, really. And, you know, the other people thing I tell people, I'll bet you found it true, too, is that you just never know when you do something like your show or you do something else, what's going to happen. Sometimes a huge break turns into the launching of the Titanic, and other times something you're pretty sure has been a disaster ends up being one of the best things that ever happened to you. Once in a while, I'm asked to give a talk or something, and I tell people, look, today's disaster is tomorrow's funny story. Mm-hmm. And it's not funny today while it's happening. You know, I know that you wanted me to address a couple things. One time when I was doing some production work, I get this call, and this guy said, we want you, my son. We had lasers at the time. You know, we were doing some production work. Said, we want you to come and ballyhoo the Hollywood sign when it's reopened. With ballyhoo meaning like when you make searchlights go around it, you know?
Yeah.
And I hung the phone up and I said, I have arrived. Sorrento's, it was live TV to half the country, right?
Wow.
Yeah, Lola Falana, who I never met. But here's a woman who's a singer, and she won part of a baseball team in a back rat game, which then she sold for $14 million. I mean, this is quite a piece of work. So this is at the big time. I've been waiting for this, right? So we borrow a couple lasers. I didn't have any at the time. And each one of them was worth like $5,000. And we go up to the top of the mountain. And I got to tell you, it never sleets in Southern California, but it sleeted that night. And it was live, you know, they were at the base of the Hollywood sign, and there we were up there. So came our moment, and you get the old finger 3-2-1 go thing, you know.
Yeah.
And we fired up the first laser, and it immediately blew up. So there was $5,000 right there.
Wow.
And my wife and I had just been married, so she's standing there watching me kind of clapping gently. Oh, that's pretty good, you know. And so we started holding on umbrellas over the other laser, and it sent out about 2 beams, and that blew up. So the next thing I know, we're sitting at the base of the Hollywood sign, and I turned to Glory. We hadn't been married for a couple of months. And I said, well, we just tanked live in front of probably 20 million people. This is not a good thing. But the next day, we were supposed to get paid. So that morning, I said to Gloria, well, it was a disaster, but at least we get some money today. So, Sorrentos, I call the company, right? And I say, hey, I want to come over and pick up my check. And the guy who answers the phone said, well, good luck with that. The company just declared bankruptcy. So I'm sitting there at my desk, and I mean, we were really broke. I mean, we were food money broke, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember I had my head in my hands. I don't know if I was weeping, but probably. And Gloria came up and grabbed my elbow and said, "You have got to see this." And she was holding a copy of the LA Times. So it was paper then. And they had this rave review about us. Their lasers flashing into the night sky and blah, blah, Hollywood sign, this and that. My phone starts ringing. And what happened was, when it started to sleet, which blew up our lasers, everybody down below, the reporters and so forth, went to the open bar in a trailer they had down there, and everybody got hammered. So when they actually did the opening of the sign, the company that went bankrupt had searchlights up there, and they did it. They actually were the ones that ballyhooed the sign. Serrano's was the best review I ever got in all the years I did that kind of work, and got us a ton of business. Wow. So you just don't know.
You never know. So we have a question from one of the listeners. Is asking, what made you want to write your book?
Well, mainly because in reading a lot of other memoirs, I realized they were really self-serving. And in my view, they didn't reflect how life really happens, which is, you know, things like the Hollywood sign, or I've got a story in here about roping a bear and things. That's what really happens. And I like to think there's a thread of something in my book. You know, these stories kind of tie together. But really, it was because I just read all this stuff and I thought, it doesn't happen like that. Life doesn't happen like that. You go out and do things and things start to unfold. And if you go with them, then you get involved with some weird stuff. That's the way it really happens. It's not some pre-planned, stentorian kind of thing with flags waving in the background. So I decided, well, hell, I'll write my own book. And I'll talk about, you know, sparking a riot in Fargo, North Dakota, which we did one time, and or the day we pitched the loan shark, stuff like that. And I'll tell you, Serrano, it's probably no surprise to you, but this is a series of 27, call them vignettes, but sort of like short stories. Each chapter is a start and a complete finish, so somebody can read a chapter and they don't have to read the whole book to get the point. And I was told when I first set out to do it, the publishers were all shrieking, "That's not done. That's now memoirs aren't done. People listen that." And as it turns out, in this age of 150 characters we live in, it turned out to be a pretty good approach. And people said, "How did you come up with that?" And I said, "Well, most of my stories I could tell in 5 pages or 10 pages. So it really wasn't a big decision. It was just the best way for me to write it. So that's why, basically, because the memoir is out there to answer the question. I felt they were self-serving, and just reading it, you know, I've lived a life, so have you. And you read something, you say, it doesn't happen like that. No, you know, we all take our pants off and we all use the bathroom. And it just, that's the way, you know, it's just part of it's life. Yeah. So you should portray it. So that's what I tried to do.
Okay, if you had to do it all over again, what's the one thing you would change in your career?
Well, really, as weird as this may sound, the one thing I would probably change would be my whole career. I found out late in life how much I enjoyed, flipping houses and doing things. And in fact, there's one story in the book, but it's one plug after another, isn't it? Called The Day the Lord Worked in a Mysterious Way. And it's not a religious piece. It's about when we moved a 100-year-old Victorian house and what happened. And so if I had to make any change, I'd probably like the Monty Python thing. And now for something completely different and get into, you know, building and especially refurbishing old places, which I find enormously gratifying. Why, I don't know.
Okay. What do you think is the best way to promote a book? For authors out there, or people on a limited budget, what do you recommend?
What we're doing right now. There's a thing out there called radioguestlist.com. I believe that's where I found you, but it's a listing of really good shows who are looking for different kinds of folks to talk to, like you do. And I have found, I've tried a lot of stuff, And I have found there's just nothing like having the opportunity to do what you and I are doing right now. So if any artists ask me, that's what I would tell them is, you know, reach out to people and reach out to the media and see if you can't get some people doing, you know, what you're doing, radio stations and other folks. You're pretty large as it goes in the marketplace. You've got tremendous coverage out there. And see if you can get interviewed. I think it's by far absolutely the best.
I have to completely agree with you. Having an honest conversation, of course, like this is really important because sometimes people focus on press releases and they're like, hey, I was on that magazine. They just posted your press release online and no one's going to look at it. You know, at least with something like this, not only do you have live listeners that can listen to you, but then it gets put on a podcast and then you can download it and then you can share it on your socials and say, look, today I was on Google, tomorrow I'm on Spotify, the next day I'm on Apple Music. You can literally keep putting different links out there for a month and using it to promote yourself in some capacity.
Yep. You're absolutely right. And I can tell you from personal experience, I tried a lot of stuff, including press releases. This is by far the best avenue. So that, you know, absolutely. And I've tried a lot of stuff, as I and my wallet can attest. And this is, you know, absolutely the best way to go.
All right. So speaking about your wallet, one of the questions I love to ask almost every guest on this show is about scams. Tell us about a scam that you fell for, one you want to warn us about in the book publishing industry and the book marketing industry, because one of my main points of this show is to protect listeners and other artists out there and authors.
Well, you know, I've been shamelessly plugging Tales from the Day, you know, my book. What happened to me when I went out there? Now, Sarantos, I got to tell you, I thought I was pretty sophisticated. You know, I'd rattled around Hollywood for a bit, and I thought, I'll be able to smell a scam from a mile away. They hammered me and fleeced me like I was a sheep. And, I mean, really, the scams out there for new authors are unbelievable. The minute you put up a book, suddenly you're descended upon by legions of flim-flam artists and fake publishers and whatever. So I was contacted by a group I knew, and they asked me to write a white paper, which became a book. I didn't know you were going to ask me this, honest. The name of the book is You're an Author, Don't Get Hustled. And it just went up on Amazon to a bit of stir, and it's got a listing in it of all the hustles I ran across, and there were a lot, and what to watch out for, and when you're going to put your book out there, things to do, things not to do, how to smell out a fake publisher and somebody just trying to take your money and they won't do anything for you. And you know, the book's, I think, chock full of good information. I like to think so. But to answer your question, there are so many. There's so many of equal danger, but there's one in particular that is, I think, particularly unethical, is there are a lot of groups out there who, you know, you put out, you pitch publishers and you say, this is my book. It's about, and then you'll get a letter one day or an email saying, Sarantos, we just heard about your book. My God, I've been in publishing 20 years and I've looked for this book my entire life. And what they are, and they say, you know, sign up with us and we'll put you on Amazon, which you can do yourself in 10 minutes, by the way. And, you know, we'll give you a printed copy of your book, which they get for free. And then you get involved with them and you find out all their promotions are what are called co-promotions. Which means, Sarantos, put up $1,000 and we'll do X, Y, and Z. And we'll co-promote it. We'll, you know, they imply they pay half. No. What you pay is all of it.
Yeah.
Plus 15%. So they keep the 15% and they put you in ads on social media or some stupid thing you could do yourself. It's probably the most unethical. I mean, they are groups organized to take the hopes and dreams of people and empty their bank accounts. That's really what they do. So you know, anybody who wants to get a list of scams that I found, and there's a lot, I'd suggest it's self-serving. I know. But the name of the book, again, is You're an Author? Don't Get Hustled. And it just went up on Amazon. I mean, just went up.
Wonderful.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I highly encourage the young authors out there or even seasoned authors to check that out, because there's nothing worse than people that prey on indie artists. And sometimes you think, oh, it's this $500,000, $2,000 hit, but it's just as guilty to fall for these $20, $50 things, because you think, oh, that's not a lot of money, and you see nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they're sharks too.
Well, they are. And, you know, there's a saying out there that I often quote, that the schemes are designed to fatten the ego and slim the wallet.
Yes.
And that's really what they're designed to do, is, you're an author now, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And so you want it to work, and you're proud of what you've done, and they'll just fleece you like a sheep. So, yeah. And, I mean, the $25 and $50 things, blink your eyes, and you spent $500 or $1,000, and you get nothing.
You get nothing, yep.
Yeah.
And I think it's just such a shame because, again, we've all fallen for it. I've fallen for it. You know, you're desperate to see some traction. And if someone tells you that they're going to ethically and honestly market it, because marketing works, and they're going to give you some Spotify listeners or followers, you think it's like putting a Facebook ad or a Google AdWord. You think you're getting legitimate, but it's BS. It's people in Indonesia or Bangladesh or Turkey. And it just is completely worthless. It skews your numbers. And I would highly recommend you not do it.
Yeah, good for you. Well, you've seen, as they used to say, we've both seen the elephant. And, you
I've
know,
been stepped on by the elephant, my friend.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. And the elephant's droppings. This will make you laugh, I bet. The book, Don't Get Hustled, went up. And I think there's 10 reviews now. I mean, it's just happening. It just happened. 9 of them are 5-star. 1 of them is 1-star by somebody I have no idea. They clearly didn't buy the book because it was only starting yesterday you could order it. And so I think I gored their ox. You know, they read the first chapter or two, which you can read on Amazon for free. And something I said in there really touched a nerve, and they were shrieking away about this and that. And I thought, you get 10 reviews and they're all 5-star, and you get 1 that's 1-star. It's pretty clear that somebody is, you know, hoping they can kill the baby in the cradle, right? So, yeah.
My friend, I will tell you that I've gotten a 1-star review on every single thing I've put out there, at least one. So don't feel bad. Even my best rated song, which was 99.9 percentile rated, even that one had a 1-star review, and it's just like, really?
So. I think it's even worse for you as a musician, honestly, because, you know, these days, everybody thinks they're, you know, musically sophisticated or can be a critic. You know, with books, there's a lot of that, but I don't think nearly as much. Really, everything you put out has gotten a little cat. I'm going to have to callous up a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, nah, it's all good. Tell us the strangest compliment you've ever gotten.
Strangest compliment I've ever gotten, probably would be from an old guy in the woods when I was fighting forest fires. I wrote a couple stories about that. And this guy, I was in college at the time, and this guy hated college kids. I mean, hated college kids. And one night, one of our bunkmates came in drunk with a gun and allowed us how he was going to kill everybody in the bunkhouse. This was, you know, and this was before the mass shootings, but he was really drunk and, you know, was loading his rifle and dropping bullets on the floor. And so everybody, I'm leading to the compliment here. So everybody got up, and we had a variety of people in the bunkhouse, and everybody was grabbing a knife or something to hit this guy with, right? And so I leaped from bed, and Sorantos, I want you to know, other than the label on my underwear that had pictures of fruit on it, I had nothing. So I told people later, I think I was planning to belt him with an apple from my Fruit of the Looms, you know? Yeah. So we all went over to hop on this guy just as he jacked around into his rifle. And he dropped his rifle, and he leaned over and leaned over and leaned over, and next thing we could hear was him snoring. And he'd passed out on top of his loaded gun. So the next day, they hauled him off, and shortly after that, I left. And as I left, this old guy, he and I were two of them that jumped up trying to put down the man with the gun. He got on the, and this was really a crotchety old guy, you know. And he came out on the bunkhouse steps, and he said, "Hey, you know, for a college expletive, you did okay." And I looked at him and I thought, "Well, thanks, I think." And I started to say thanks, and he said, "Ah, go F yourself," and went back in the bunkhouse, and that was it. And Serratos, I tell you, I've gotten a couple of awards in my day and other things, but you know, looking back, I don't think anything meant or has meant as much to me as that. That guy, what he said. Seriously, I mean, these were guys with the bark on, and they didn't care about anything. But did you work, and did you have some sand if the guano hit the turbine? You know, so
yeah. We have another listener question for you. What is a book you hated that everybody else loved?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know where your audience is. I would have to say, it would have to be Wuthering Heights. Oh, God, Bronte sisters. You know, this is a classic. And I read this thing the first time, and I thought, oh, God, this is dark as midnight. One close to that probably is another classic, Anna Karenina by the Russian writer, Dostoevsky. Don't pronounce that very well. And in the end, she throws herself under a train. And I thought, why didn't she just emigrate to America? You know, nobody cares if you were a duchess having an affair or not. So there was a period of writing when it was dark. You know, when the social strata was even more worse than it is now, and there were the nobles and all this kind of stuff, and you know, having an affair or straying from the norm would not only get you ostracized, but it was like a death sentence. And people used to write about that, particularly the Russians.
Yeah.
Dark folks. Okay.
Yeah, great question, Tiffany.
Yeah,
now,
really.
Let's take the opposite. What's a book that you loved that everybody else hated?
I would probably have to be Portnoy's Complaint. Yeah, I read that and I thought, yikes, you know, and everybody was raving about this thing. Another one is a bunch of stuff by Hunter Thompson, you know, the Gonzo journalist. And everybody was raving about this guy. And the first time I read his stuff, I thought, this guy is stoned. I mean, he's completely wrecked, and he's just pouring out this crap without even decent punctuation. And everybody's raving over it like he's the new Kierkegaard, you know. And I just thought, yeah. So between those two, but some of the stuff written in England about that period, that was a Victorian period. Everybody, they're making movies out of it now, as you know, and everybody's, you know, dancing around in the costumes and all that. And I read that book and I thought, man, this really sucks. So there you go.
Okay. How about the last gift you gave someone?
I would, yeah, good or bad?
How about both?
Not going to let me off the hook here, are you?
Yeah.
I would have to say that a really good gift I gave somebody is, there's this person I know that really, just out of the blue, I belong to a couple writers group, and I put a part of my manuscript, and she said, "I'd like to go over that and review it for you." And it turned out she was brilliant. I mean, not because the review was good, but she was just really bright and well-read and whatever. And so I turned her on to somebody I knew up the food chain a bit. And it turns out she got a bunch of work for it and then a lot of professional recognition. And before, she was just, I mean, nobody would give her the time of day, and she was really talented. I'll bet you run across musicians like that a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and where, you know, so much of it, there's always an element of luck. Worst gift I've ever given somebody, probably one thing, you know, back in the day, I had the opportunity to cast a couple of commercials. You know, in other words, pick the people who are going to be in them. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, Serrano, I found that after a couple of goes, I just couldn't do it because people, you know, we're so desperate to get the work. And if you need a 6 foot tall guy who says, now I'm on a horse, you can't hire a 4 foot guy. You know, I mean, there's certain requirements, right? And so I'd see people who were really, really good that didn't get the work. You couldn't give it to them just because of the requirements of the production. Yeah. So to answer your question about the worst, there was a person I knew, a guy, who was desperate to break into the business acting. And I helped him as I best I could, but he was really bad. And one day, you know how it is with musicians. I'm sure it's the same way, where you can listen to something, you can tell if they've got that thing. Whatever that thing is, even if their playing ain't that great, sometimes you can just listen to them and they've got that heart that you can't teach anybody, right? So one day the guy called me up and he was pretty depressed, and I probably didn't help, but he asked me what I thought he should do. And I said, you know what I think you should do? I said, I think you should pack it in and be a teacher. People love you. And oh, God, he got upset. I mean, because I think he might have known that. So in the end, he ended up doing something like that. I don't think because of my thing. But in terms of a gift, you know, sometimes the gift of honesty can be pretty brutal. And normally I don't do that because I've found, as you've probably found too, that there are times when the most unlikely people do the most powerful of things. And, you know, when I was writing You're an Author, Don't Get Hustled, I was going to put a thing in there about part of succeeding as an author is that you've got to write something good that people want to read. It's like music. Yeah, you know, you may be brilliant, but you know, if you don't produce, I've listened to some of your stuff. I really liked it. I didn't want to rip it off. We'll talk about that later. But because it's very, it's just great stuff. You can listen to it, and I don't want to, you know, beat the dog there too much. But anyway, I started writing in the book about, you know, you've got to write something. You've got to be a writer. You've got to write something good that's well written that people respond to. And then I thought, you know, who the hell am I to say? Who am I to tell somebody that they, you know, they need to be able to write something good? And so I published two reviews that Mark Twain got when he first put out Huckleberry Finn, now considered the greatest American novel ever. And the reviews, Serrantos, they were scathing.
Yeah.
You know, this is a dumbass book about some Southern cracker, and he doesn't speak well and runs around with minority people and whatever. They were terrible. And yet, look what happened. So in the book, I just said, you know, if you think you want to write, write. You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know how you advise people in the music industry. Clearly, you've had some success. So, you know, you know what you're talking about. And I don't know. It's the hardest thing in the world, don't you think? I mean, I think it is.
I do. I absolutely positively do. You have to stay grounded at all times. And you can't get cocky because you can get humbled very quickly in any creative business.
Yeah. Well, I remember reading a thing by Ray Bradbury before he passed away. And he said before he published anything, before he was able to publish anything, he wrote over 2 million words I mean, my God, that is a huge amount of work. And he got better and better and better and better and better. And now his works are classic.
Yeah.
So there is something about just keeping at it. You know, you might suck today, but maybe you won't suck tomorrow.
Yeah, that's totally true. All right. Before we get to your contact information, I got one more question for you. Tell me how you would describe the color purple to somebody who's blind.
I'm holding on to my chair. All right. I would say to, if I had it, or if I didn't at that moment, I'd get it. I'd get a piece of velvet and I'd say, feel that. That's purple. Best
well
answer
said.
I can get.
Yeah, well said. I like that answer. Wayne, give us your contact information, your website. Where can people find your book?
Well, my website is waynemcfarland.com. Tales from the Day, it's talesfromtheday.com. And either place, you can find, there's a link, strangely enough, to Amazon, so you can buy it. And now, you know, my other book, we haven't put up websites on it yet, the one about, you know, you're an author, don't get hustled. That one, just go to Amazon and look for it. That's really getting some traction because so many people have been heard out there. And I'm sure the music industry is probably even more so because everybody just wants to be in it so badly.
Yeah. Well, Wayne, I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was wonderful.
Oh, really? I can't tell you how much I enjoyed it. You actually got people asking questions and stuff. Fantastic. Really?
Yeah. Wonderful. All right. So to any listeners out there who may be artists or authors, if you want to be on the Songwriter Show, please just reach out and email me. I want to thank everyone for listening tonight, and I hope everyone's unique story gets heard around the world. My name is Sorantos. Please join me every Tuesday night to hear other amazing artists and authors share their fascinating behind-the-scenes stories right here at the Songwriter Show. And tonight, I'm going to leave you with one of my songs called Do You Want to Dance? Anxiety, nervousness, palpitations. Who hasn't felt these even when their heartthrobs stood in the same room? You stare across at them. Do you remember that high school dance, longing to ask them a dance? It's such a simple question, a simple gesture, but there's always a possibility of them saying no. And so you're paralyzed with fear until you get the nerve up to finally ask. So I hope you enjoy this pop song called Do You Want to Dance? And I'll see you again next Tuesday night. Have a great night, everyone. I love you guys. Thank you.
Show me a sign. Can you please be mine? All night long, your smile's going strong. Such a fool to think what luck would do. I fell hard for you. Hey, I wanna try, but I'm way too shy, too shy. Every eye in the room can see that my heart is beating so wildly. Do you wanna dance? Dance with me. I wanna know, am I too late for the show? Do you wanna dance with me? I wanna know, am I too late for the show? Do you realize I'm so paralyzed? Do you wanna dance with me? I gotta know, am I too late? Do you wanna dance with me? Do you wanna dance? Oh boy, do you wanna dance with me?
Thank you for listening to The Songwriter Show. To keep the momentum going, head over to www.songwritershow.com and join our free music community of artists, songwriters, and producers. That's www.songwritershow.com.
Thank you for choosing Pesmo Radio.